better than I expected. I will talk today about the particular work that has been done over the last year by this company of people. And the subject of this work is to try to understand relativistic viscous hydrodynamics in the context of the ADS-CFT correspondence. Just in case there are people who were not yet indoctrinated sufficiently by this program, let me just remind you in one slide why this whole thing is of any interest or any importance for high energy physics now. Most of you know that there is this experimental program on colliding heavy ions at RIC, and the second part will start at LHC, hopefully, this year. And this program is aimed at studies of hot and dense nuclear matter. And there is an abundance of experimental results and very poor theoretical understanding of those results still. And you will see shortly that the situation is actually much worse than is presented here. The reason for that is the following. So when you collide heavy ions, you create this fireball of QCD or nuclear liquid or quark gluon plasma, whatever you call it. And this fireball, of course, expands and disintegrates into hadrons, and you measure properties of hadrons, and you try to say something about the properties of the quark gluon plasma based on this distribution functions that you get as a result of this measurement. Now, in order to understand this situation, which is, of course, not an equilibrium situation, you have to know not only thermodynamics, not only static properties such as pressure, entropy, equation of state, all these things that you can actually measure on the lattice at strong coupling if you want, but you also need to know kinetics. And kinetics means that you need to solve equations of essentially relativistic hydrodynamics with a particular set of transport coefficients or kinetic coefficients, such as, for example, viscosity, shear viscosity, bulk viscosity, and so on. And these coefficients must come from underlying microscopic theory, which is, in this case, QCD at finite temperature and density. But in the conditions of RIC and LHC, it's QCD in the strongly coupled regime, or at least in the regime where a coupling constant is of order one. So it's pretty hopeless to use perturbative thermal QCD for extracting those coefficients theoretically, and there are no reliable ways to do it sort of in non-perturbative fashion along the known lines. So the bottom line is that this setup of this experiment is very difficult for theoretical analysis simply because the quark gluon fluid or this nuclear fluid created in this collision is a strongly interacting nuclear fluid and not a dilute gas to which you can apply Boltzmann equation, Vlasov equation, and so on, and compute these transport properties. Okay? But the situation is actually a little bit worse. So let's look at QCD kinetics. How precisely, so you have RIC experiment, right, and you want to extract viscosity, for example. Let's concentrate on viscosity for definiteness. So viscosity is one of the parameters which is used in the Hydra models describing the asymmetry in momentum space of distribution of these final particles after this collision, all right? So we have something which is, so you measure this distribution of these particles with respect to momentum and the azimuthal angle. You have certain expression which you expand in Fourier series. And for example, the coefficient in front of cosine to phi is called the elliptic flow. It's a coefficient which depends on the transverse momentum. It depends on the type of the species of the particles, pi ns, k ns, and so on. So there is this index I here. And this coefficient was measured with considerable precision at RIC. All right, so this is one of the typical plots that people show. With dots shown are the experimental results for the elliptic flow versus PT. And the lines, the red one and the blue one, correspond to numerical simulations, essentially, of Navier-Stokes equations with particular transport coefficients fitted in, with viscosity and our transport coefficients fitted in. Okay? So in principle, you may say the following. So given experimental data, given this graph, and given the simulations, the numerical simulations that you do with Navier-Stokes equations of relativistic hydra, you can say that, all right, so let's fit in some parameter, eight over s, viscosity over entropy density, and just see what is the value of this parameter which fits the experimental curve best, and that will be the outcome of this measurement of the viscosity, shear viscosity in the actual PCD, all right? And if you read the papers of the people who are doing these numerical fits, you would discover various statements like this one, that the experimental elliptic flow at RIC is reproduced if the ratio of viscosity over entropy density does not exceed a certain so there is an upper bound on that, which in many papers is, well, it varies with various conditions, but it's around 0.3 or something like that, right? And that already rules out explanation of these effects by perturbative PCD, because if you compute perturbatively this value at the energy scale which correspond to the RIC temperature, you will get number which is much larger than the one obtained from these numerical fits. All right. Now, some interest to ADS-CFT correspondence from this heavy ion community came because of the fact that calculations in ADS-CFT gives the ratio of 8 over s, which is small, not as large as the perturbative PCD, but much, much smaller. So it's 1 over 4 pi plus some corrections. And naively, if you just plug in the numbers that would sort of naively equate PCD at high temperature to n equals 4 superamp mils, you will get some numbers like 0.09 to 0.28. And it sort of fits nicely with this numerical fit of Navier-Stokes equations. Okay, so that was a picture of about half a year ago. And people were sort of overly excited by that sometimes, and saying that yes, it's, we have some explanation, strongly coupled plasma viscosity and our transport and so on. But then a number of papers appeared where people actually tried to improve these bounds. And when you try to improve these bounds, there is a disastrous consequence, which is illustrated on this paper. It's a pretty recent one of December by Heinz and Song. So what is happening is the following. Again, this is elliptic flow taken from relativistic hydra simulations versus PT. There are no experimental points shown here for some reason. I don't know why they don't put them here. Maybe there is a good reason for that. but the basic tendency is the following. This line here is ideal hydra. All right, this is a hydra without any dissipative terms, in particular viscosity, essentially with zero viscosity. All right. So the effect of this, and other lines are lines in which you put in some number for ratio of 8 over s, some non-zero viscosity. So the net effect on the presence of dissipative terms in this relativistic Navier-Stokes is that it lowers the value of elliptic flow considerably, right? So it was very good on the previous slide, right? So previously, it was great because we had a disaster with perturbative QCD, which over-predicted the value of 8 over s. It was too large. So people were extremely happy that, in fact, for example, superamp mils would give you some number which is small. But now it seems that it's not small enough. So, of course, some of you remember about this conjecture about the bound 1 over 4 pi on the ratio of 8 over s. So the statement seems to be that, in fact, if we believe in all these numerical simulations and so on, that 8 over s is much smaller than 1 over 4 pi in real QCD, if you literally believe in this picture, right? So one can say that, okay, so these feeds, the black line and red line, precisely correspond to 8 over s equal to 1 over 4 pi. And I suppose, even though they don't show experimental points on this plot, I suppose that the points more or less follow the ideal hydra. Right? Of course, there is one cautious remark here, but all this picture is valid for PT, for transverse momentum, which is not large enough, right? So whatever is happening for PT, people argue what exactly is the cutoff, but 1.5, I think, is already, so whatever is to the right of 1.5 should not be taken seriously. So we have to look at the beginning of this graph somewhere here. But even here, it's quite obvious that this, even with the minimal value of A to the rest, which is conjectured from ADS-CFT, we don't fit the numerical data. And some people can conclude that, in fact, A to the rest in QCD is smaller than 1 over pi, right? Which is not a disaster, just a observation, right? So we want to know whether or not these conclusions are justified. So I wrote here that these elliptic flow from numerical simulations of relativistic hydro equations based on the so-called Israel-Stewart formulas. All right. And so in this talk, I will one of the goals of this talk is to say some words about what exactly is this formalism, why it is used, and argue that in fact this formalism is not complete and it cannot be used to adequately numerically model what is happening in the real Quark-gluon plasma QCD. All right, so that's a reminder about this conjecture. So for many fluids and other substances, the ratio of A to the rest as a function of temperature behaves in this characteristic form. It's a sort of parabolic shape with a minimum somewhere. And so we can conjecture that, in fact, the minimum lies above this 1 over 4 pi bound. And for normal liquids like helium, nitrogen, and so on, it does. If you look at other substances, yeah, so the question is, if this is a conjecture, can we test this experimentally? And we can look at heavy ion collisions, as is what we're going to do in this talk. We can also use indirect lattice QCD simulations. I will show you just one number, which is more or less modern from that, but I will not talk about this. And finally, experimentally, we can also look at trapped atoms, because they're also strongly interacting systems which behave hydrodynamically, and we can extract the ratio A to the rest for these systems. So for typical substances, behavior is like this. It's sort of parabolic. There is a minimum. So this is water. This is helium, right? The picture is pretty similar to water, right? And yep.
To those examples you listed, when you said trapped atoms, one more. When you said trapped atoms,
right?
In those systems, how many atoms are you talking about?
It's about of the order of 10,000.
Okay, so there is some sense in which
that's right. Yes. There is a fairly well-defined sense to which the system behaves better than. I will show in the next slide how they extract data for us. So these pictures look more or less similar, right? And qualitatively they look similar, and the only difference is that the minimum of A to the S in units of 1 over 4 pi with H bar and K Boltzmann for water, the minimum is 25, again in units of 1 over 4 pi, is 25 above this conjectured bound. For helium, it's 8.8, so it comes lower. And then, of course, the natural question is, what is this thing in QCD? So going back to your question. I believe, yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, so this statement is not completely correlated to the graph because, right, the units, God knows. Right. I don't remember. It's possible that it's definitely not 1 over 4 pi. So it could be 4 pi times. Could it be? Could it be the actual point? Right. 0.08 will be somewhere far below. So maybe it's not in units of 1 over 4 pi, but simply in units of H bar over K. Because the minimum would be 0.08, right? Which would be much, much lower. That seems to be the case. All right, so yeah, going back to Bob's question, for trapped atoms, the results were, I believe, carefully analyzed by Thomas Schaffer last year. And the picture that appeared in his paper looks like this. So this is A to the S versus temperature. You can see kind of a minimum. In fact, there is some belief that in fact this graph is not completely accurate for larger temperatures. But in fact, these points are supposed to go up on this side, so there should be more well-defined minimum somewhere in the middle. But the bottom line is that these calculations, these extractions of eight over s, gives you the minimum at 4.2 in units of 1/4 pi. So that's the lowest one. If you believe that everything here was done reliably and so on, then we will have 4.2, right, in units of 1/4 pi. So the natural question is, what happens in QCD, right? So the shape, whatever we know for QCD, comes from perturbation theory, both on the hadron side and pions, on the quaternion plasma side. And of course, nothing is known in the regime of strong coupling, so we can only guess or extrapolate what is. There should be some minimum here. The question is where this minimum is, and can we say more about this curve for QCD? All right. So now I want to look more closely to how exactly this number is extracted from numerics, in this solution of relativistic Navier-Stokes equations, right? So we remember that hydrodynamics is an effective theory. It's an effective description, right? So we have some microscopic structure on a small scale, but if you average it and if you look at whatever ocean or sea or this cup of coffee, then on large scales, of course, you don't see these microscopic details. You average over the things, you can see what you can describe with, let's say, Navier-Stokes equation or Euler equations. And there is a parameter which tells you when this extractive theory is supposed to be valid. And this parameter is typically some sort of mean free path in your system, especially if you're talking about system which has a kinetic regime, such as dilute gas, for example, air, right? In liquids, there is some parameter which can be used, and it doesn't have direct meaning of mean free path, but you can call it Knudsen number or whatever. But effectively, it's the same. So there is some parameter, and if this condition, where k is a momentum, typical momentum of your processes, if this condition is satisfied, then the hydro regime for sufficiently small momenta is valid, right? So in the UV, it's not supposed to be valid. Of course, it's not supposed to be valid when you go down to the microscopic structure of water or coffee or whatever. So this leads to various consequences. So first of all, the equations of the first order hydrodynamics are parabolic, right? The diffusion equation, the Navier-Stokes equations, they contain first derivative with respect to time. So these equations are parabolic, and this implies the instant propagation of signals, right? So which, of course, if you want to simulate relativistic processes, is not very good because it's incompatible with special relativity. But this disaster happens only in the UV, and in the UV, the hydro description is invalid. So in principle, there is no clash, there is no fundamental clash between relativistic, between the notion of relativistic hydra and the special theory of relativity and the fact that there is no hyperbolic equation appearing in this theory, right? So the standard illustration of this is the diffusion equation. You take the ordinary diffusion equation. Of course, it suffers from the lack of causality, if you want, because if you consider it on one line, right, so suppose you have some signal at the origin, right, so the heat wave or something, some delta function at the origin, and then you remember the fundamental solution of the heat equation, right? It's exponent with e to the minus x over t and for t and so on, right? So the fundamental solution tells you that immediately, once you switch on the signal at the origin, x equal to zero, immediately, no matter how far from the origin, immediately there will be some signal, right? Because your solution is such that it immediately, so any observer sitting here would immediately, at the same moment of time, would feel the presence of the signal, the presence of the heat wave here, right? And that, of course, violates the propagation with instant velocity. All right, but why it is not a disaster, as I said here, simply because if you look at the shape of this disturbance, then you can easily see that the scale. So this is an exponential solution, right? So it's kind of exponentially suppressed. And you can easily see that the magnitude of this signal somewhere here, let's call it delta, can be compared with the mean free path with the typical scale where a hydro description actually breaks down, right? So, and if you compare where exactly this solution has sense, namely that that this delta is much less than some typical scale like Minsky path, then there is no problem because the point where they become of the same order will actually propagate with a speed which is much less than the velocity of light. Right? So in that sense, everything is fine with the regime of validity of hydrodynamics and special relativity. So simply, of course, formally speaking, there is a violation of causality and so on in this region, but in this region, Hydra is not valid. All right, so you just don't care about what is happening there because the theory is not valid there anymore. Anyway, but still, a lack of causality is very unpleasant, especially in numerical simulations, because it leads to various instabilities, right? Especially with initial conditions and so on. People want to avoid this, and it would be very convenient to have a sort of ultraviolet completion, which would be valid both in strong and weak coupling, just for let's say for the sake of convenience in numerical simulations, not for fundamental reasons. As I said here, fundamental reasons are intact. I mean, everything is fine with the interpretation of these causalities. But we want to build some ultraviolet completion, and Israel-Stewart theory is such a completion, which was built over the years in several papers starting from the 60s. But there is one characteristic feature of this ultraviolet completion. This theory was built with a Boltzmann equation in mind, meaning it is perturbative. It kind of assumes that we're dealing with dilute gas, right? That we can build a certain second order hydrodynamics based on the sort of implicit assumption that we are dealing with this system at weak coupling, right? Perturbative system, right? Which is not the case at weak. So the statement is that ADS-CFT, so you can explicitly, ADS-CFT gives you, okay, not for QCD, but for N equals 4 super and nils, it gives you an example in which your correlators or whatever you want to compute is known without any approximations in principle. You may use numerics, but in principle, you can compute all what you want without any hydro, without approximating it in the hydrodynamic domain, right? So you can look at what you get and expand. So for example, you compute a correlator, you expand this in the hydrodynamic series, and you can compare your expansion with the generic terms which can be found in this Israel-Stewart theory, right? And you just compare whether not all the terms are present. And the outcome is that not all the terms which are found in N equals 4 are actually present in Israel-Stewart. And then you have to generalize this expansion to account for them.
No. And in particular, the new terms that you're going to talk about, they are not necessarily the ones that I missed because it was a weak coupling. My understanding is that that's simply an incomplete analysis, but I don't see why you put it with that it's weak coupling versus strong coupling.
Because you can try to derive the terms in Israel-Stewart from the Boltzmann equation, and you succeed. But at the moment, as far as I know,
need string theory to do that.
No.
So in principle, I'm saying that I can just, well, pretty much, just look at the effective field theory, right?
Yes.
And so that,
yes.
It's just because Israel still tried to match the hydro description and identify, right?
That's right.
But in principle,
not so much to match. They actually used Boltzmann to give insights. You will see in a moment that it's not a trivial, actually, it's not a trivial activity to write all those terms. But you're right, yeah, I mean, even if it, so ADS-CFT or string theory just gives a very well-known example where you can actually compare the whole expansion. So if you believe that ADS-CFT is correct, right, it means that all terms in this expansion must be accounted for in Israel-Stewart or whatever ultraviolet completion you are building, right? And the statement is that if you just naively take whatever they wrote, you know, 20 years ago, so there are some terms missing there.
Yeah, so I understand that, but my question is, could they have figured it out?
Yes.
Without
without string theory, yeah. Right. I will show in a moment that it's in fact, it's just because apparently they never, well,
I never bothered to look at conformal case. All right, so let me say a few words about the generic structure of the hydrodynamics. Right, so in hydrodynamics, fundamental degrees of freedom are densities of conserved charges. The energy density and momentum density. So without, essentially, if we don't want to consider any other charges, like global electric charge or any global charge in general, just forget about them. There are four basic degrees of freedom, the density of energy and density of momentum, right? There are altogether four. And you may think of these in terms of effective theory as so-called slow variables and fast variables, right? You integrate over fast variables and you keep the flow change variables, because in hydrodynamics, ultimately, as time goes by, what you will get is a collection of conserved charges. You get thermodynamic equilibrium. Thermodynamic equilibrium is characterized by the collection of conserved charges, which is the global energy, global momentum. Right? So these variables, these four variables, will relax infinitely slow. Right? They are the slow varying degrees of freedom, and you have to integrate over the rest. Okay, so that's the philosophy. Now, here is an example with the charge diffusion, which tells you that you have some conserved charge, right? There's a conservation equation. In hydrodynamics, in addition to that, so your degree of freedom is the density of conserved charge, J0, right? But you also have other quantities like Ji, and you have to write a second equation, which comes from phenomenology, if you want. So this is an effective field theory equation. You write it based on the symmetry sort of problem and common sense, if you want. And you have to keep all the allowed terms. So the consecutive relation in this case is simply that the current is the minus gradient of the density of the charge. And in this relation, you neglect into the first order derivative, you neglect other terms. And other terms are of two types. There could be nonlinear terms, such as the gradient of the charge squared and higher orders. And the second type is high derivative terms, right? So like this one. So fine, that is an example for the conserved charge. If you look at the stress energy tensor, which contains viscosities and this is of interest to us, then again, so you have conservation equation, which gives you four equations. As I said before, there are four degrees of freedom. You can trade T00 and T0i for something more convenient in hydro, which is the energy density and the four velocity. Of course, this velocity u mu is constrained by this condition. So altogether, although there are four components, plus one constraint, it gives us three, plus epsilon, it's four. Okay, so there are 4 degrees of freedom. And then you write the standard expansion for the stress energy tensor. So here is the part which does not contain derivatives at all. Right? So there are some tensor structures which are built out of this u mu velocity, which they're not very illuminating, but simply just accept that they exist. Right? So there is a projector which is written here. Right, and there is a sigma mu, which is built out of mu and covariant derivatives. Yeah, I will work in curved space in d dimensions just for generality, right? So and then there is a symmetrized thing which is defined for that for any tensor, and out of these ingredients you can write mu as a part which does not contain derivatives. It's this one, right? There's epsilon and some function of epsilon which is pressure. And then there is a dissipative part, p mu. Right? The p mu in the first order hydra, so this is the first order hydra, it will contain just curved derivatives of our fundamental degrees of freedom, which are epsilon and mu's. Right? And this can be written like this if you split it in sort of transverse traceless and just transverse part. The coefficients in front of these two parts are called the shear viscosity and the bulk viscosity. All right? So that is first order hydrodynamics, which we all use and like and so on. And the idea now is to go beyond, so to sort of write down what is dot 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 here, right? And that will give us high derivative terms. In particular, it will give us second order derivatives in time, which will lead to hyperbolic equations of motion, which will give us signals which propagate the finite velocity, right? That's the goal. So we will fight the lack of causality by adding more derivatives and then modify our equations of motion. But again, it's just for convenience, because this picture here tells you that no matter what we are doing in the ultraviolet, our region of interest is infrared,
And no matter how we modify theory here, in fact, we have to take the limit of our KL much less than 1. We go to infrared, and hydrodynamic properties will be extracted from this region. All right. So let's look. So this is first order. Let's look at the second order. To look at the second order, I want to make a dramatic simplification, right? A dramatic simplification is that I want to consider only conformal hydrodynamics, because otherwise it's a horrible mess. Conformal, a condition that the theory for which I want to write my hydro equations is conformal, simply means that there is no other scale at finite temperature except the temperature itself. A typical example, n equals 4 superrank mills at finite temperature, there's only one scale, the temperature itself. This condition dramatically simplifies the rest of the equations, and it will also allow me to compare directly with n equals 4 example from ADS CFT correspondence. All right, so in order to put these constraints, right, so, okay, so we have these dilatations, right, for the metric, and you can just go formula by formula and see how various things transform, and then demand that the whole expression in the end will be invariant under the Weyl transformations, and you kill all the rest, all the other terms which are not invariant, right? So in first order hydro, the conditions that the Kimi Niu transforms under Weyl transformations like this, and it must be traceless. So these two conditions put some constraint on first order hydro. It implies that the equation of state is given by, in d dimensions, is given by this thing from which you can extract speed of sound immediately, and the bulk viscosity must be equal to zero. Okay, so that of course we all know before. Now, then you mu transforms like this, temperature like this, and sigma mu like this. So you discover that all these constraints, the conformal constraints, will lead to the general structure of Kimi Niu in conformal theory of this type. All right, so bulk viscosity is gone, there is shear viscosity, and then there is a structure. So it puts some constraints. Now I want to go to the next order. I want to consider this dot, dot, dot term, which contains second derivatives. And there, the condition that we consider only conformal fluids is really of crucial, a crucial importance.
Transformations, is that any more restrictive?
Is that any more restrictive? I believe it is in the second.
I mean, it doesn't look like it makes a difference at this level.
No, not at this level, I have to think about it. I'm not entirely sure. Maybe it's also irrelevant for the next one. Okay, I have to think about it. All right, so the second order. The second order, we have this Kimi Niu, and here I just write down the answer. So to arrive to this answer, you have to write down all possible terms, which are the second order, which have the right structure under the conformal transformations and so on. It's a horrible mess. I will not show you. This is the outcome. This is the first order term, which was in the previous transparency. In addition to that, you have basically several structures, right? So there is some structure which is multiplied by. So of course, when you have second order terms, you introduce new transfer coefficients, which were not there before. Just like shear and bulk viscosity were in first order terms, you introduce new transfer kinetic coefficients. And these kinetic coefficients are tau p, the so-called relaxation time. And then there is another coefficient kappa, and there are lambda 1, lambda 2, and lambda 3. So these terms are, well, physically, I probably will not be able to give you good interpretation of them, except for the first term, of which I will speak in a moment. But not one thing that, there are certain terms which are absent if you are, so this omega is called vorticity of
liquid is built out of the derivative. So in certain situations, so for example, if you're in flat space, then this term is gone. If your liquid is not has zero vorticity, whatever it means, right? It's not rotating, probably these terms are gone, and you left it this piece. Okay, but.
So in the absence of vorticity, one of the lambdas is left or not?
In the absence of vorticity, one of the lambda is here. Yeah.
Is left. Right?
Yeah.
And so pretty much the difference from the old Israel is at this stage.
No, the difference I will show in the next slide. Okay. There is a difference.
Okay.
All right. So this stuff is Israel theory.
Right. So then the okay. So I'm just trying to listen. So they have, in some sense, they have been not careful enough in analyzing all terms,
right.
And there was also a need to generalize to looking at the curve. Coupled to
right.
to a curve background.
Yeah. As you said before, all of this could have been done years ago.
And from this perspective, it has nothing to do with whether this is weak coupling or
strong coupling,
because that's what my confusion
sure.
because all the analysis is on the language. On the level of
except the one thing that if you try to reproduce the thing from Boltzmann equation, you have this is not resolved. There are difficulties in producing several terms here from Boltzmann.
But are there right?
Maybe it's just a question.
Are there some terms? Okay, so let me ask. So are there some terms that Boltzmann predicts and they're missing here? Is it the other way around?
It's the other way around.
Okay. So, but this is the most general tangent.
Yeah, this is the most general
subject
to another graph.
So
for conformal fluid, this is the most general structure you can write. And you can write it without thinking of string theory, right? Just write all the
Can I ask one more question? So, if I look at the flat space and look at non conformal theories, how many more coefficients do we have?
Many more.
Is it 10 to the 2?
No, it's 10. I used to remember this number. I think it's approximately 300.
300.
Right. Yeah, so.
Even in flat space. If they have some vorticity.
Yes.
Okay.
Approximately, right? Many more.
Many more. Okay.
And that's, as you can already guess where I'm going, right? So that's probably where we should look if we actually want to understand what is happening with the brick. Because, anyway, so Israel Stewart had a different idea. And in fact, they approached this by thinking of the dissipated term. Remember this philosophy of Hydra, where you have fundamental degrees of freedom, which are densities of conserved charges, which relax infinite flow, right? Now, Israel Stewart said, well, no, let's now introduce additional degrees of freedom, which do not relax infinitely slowly, but kind of. I mean, they're closer to Hydra degrees of freedom than to the so-called fast degrees of freedom. And one of them is this tensor PMU. So they just promote PMU to new degrees of freedom and write down diffusion equation, if you want, for PMU. So this is the derivative, this D is this derivative along velocity, right? So if you want, this equation simply tells you, this is a relaxation equation, taken literally just a relaxation equation for PMU itself. So we promote PMU to an additional hyper variable and then see what happens. That was the approach. Now, we know from ABS-CFT that this is probably not a very coherent way of thinking about these degrees of freedom, because we know that, so in typical retarded correlation function in ADS-CFT of strong coupling, right, you will have the distribution of singularities which correspond to these degrees of freedom in your plasma, which will go roughly like this, right? So there are some terms, there are some poles in the complex omega plane, so this is a complex omega plane, and there are some poles which are distributed in this plane, and then these poles are divided into two groups. The hyperpoles, which has a property, so for example, a sound speed poles, they put it like this, so they have this property that when the spatial momentum is approaching zero, these poles will collapse to the origin. All right? And for the rest of the poles, it will not happen. They will stay in this limit. They will stay finite distance from the origin. So if you want to consider Hydra alone, you consider only these degrees of freedom, only these singularities in the retarded correlation function. Now, but you know that there is another set, right? And actually, there are infinitely more. So what Israel Stewart, in this language, what we were trying to do was to introduce additional pole, if you want, additional degree of freedom, which would mimic the influence of these other poles, the whole infinite collection of them, on the behavior of the hydropoles. All right? So I write down the correlator as one of those, you know, some poles, right? And I can try to cook up additional pole or additional pair of poles here that would mimic the influence of this whole infinite sequence on the correlator in the regime where Q is small. Okay, that's the approach this philosophical approach of Israel Stewart. And basically, ADS-CFT tells that this is not a very sensible approach because there are infinite many of them, and you simply cannot, the finite number of degrees of freedom, you cannot mimic the influence of the infinite number of degrees of freedom. That's all right, so finally, yeah, so we have this T menu, right? So here's our T menu. Now we want to see some consequences of this expansion. How you see the consequences? You look at the perturbation, right? We know that perturbation of the energy density, momentum density will lead to, you know, sound waves and so on, right? So you take this T menu, you consider small perturbations of this expression, and you derive the appropriate dispersion relation for these fluctuations, right? So for sound waves, for example. And you will get a sound dispersion equation, which up to this little addition looks like a typical standard sound wave, right? So it's the speed of sound times the spatial momentum. And then there is attenuation of sound with gamma, which is in d dimensions, is just proportional to shear viscosity for conformal fluids, and q squared, right? But we know, since we added second order terms, we know that this dispersion relation will be modified by terms which are q to the third and higher ones, right? And in second order formalism, we only account for the next one, the one of the order q cube, because if you want to look at this, we need to actually go to the third order Hydra and beyond, all right? So that's a term which is reliable, and we can compute it in terms of eta and tau p. Okay, so the new transport coefficient enters this dispersion relation, tau p. And we can also compute the correlation function for a particular component of a stress energy tensor from the Cooper formula, again, using the expression for T mu, which was written in the previous transparency. And this expression is written here, again, in d dimensions. It contains, in addition to shear viscosity, it contains tau p, the new transport coefficient, and it contains the new transport coefficient kappa, which is a subtle point. Because remember, if you look for the expansion for T-menu, right, you may sort of naively say, okay, so in flat space, this term which is proportional to kappa, which is multiplied by kappa, is simply zero, right? But when you compute the correlator, right, you compute the correlators by taking derivative of the action with respect to H-menu twice, right, and you will get a contribution, non-zero contribution from kappa in the Cooper formula. That is important, because if you don't do that, you will not match in ADS-CFT, you will not match two channels, right? So this is a channel which gives you tau p from the pole corresponding to propagation of sound. And this is a different channel in T-menu. So whatever you extract from here for tau p must match whatever you extract from the sound pole, all right? And okay, so this is the prediction of conformal Hydra, second order. And now we know how to compute this we compute the transport coefficient from dual gravity, right? So that's a little slide. So basically what we have to compute is the lowest quasi-normal frequency of the dual gravitational background. And so there are several ways to extract the actual transport from gravity. One of them is Green-Kubo formulas, and then you can look at poles of very tardy correlators. You compute the low squeeze normal frequency of a dual background. And there is a fourth way, which is enigmatic one from the brain paradigm. God knows what is happening there, but for some reason, all of them coincide. And here is the answer. So you compute the correlators of T mu to the third order in Q. In addition to the standard terms, which we knew for several years, there is a new term here proportional to Q cube. And right, let me skip this slide. So then you compare this to the dispersion relations which were predicted by second order Hydra and Kubo formula, right? By comparison, you extract for n equals 4 superant mills, you extract the transport coefficients. You extract viscosity, which was known before, and you also extract relaxation time, tau p, and this new coefficient kappa. Right, so all of them can be computed. Yep.
Your lambda coefficients doesn't enter in the dispersion relations with the sound waves. So they will enter later.
Right, but not sound.
Is there, right, is there some simple physical explanation why that's happening? So it's not what case it is, no. And they're still linear, but they somehow don't show up.
I think the reason is that when you analyze sound, when you analyze this perturbation of the T mu, lambda will multiply a term which is higher order in momenta. It will end.
So not the third order?
Not the third order.
No. But it's okay.
Well, it's possible, right? So one example actually is the transparency of these cases that I just skipped. If you look at the shear channels,
right.
From ADS-CFT, you can extract the pole and interaction to this pole,
right?
Which will be due to the force.
Right.
So if you do the same story in the second order formalism, you will get an impression, expression which will be proportional to Q to the fourth. And it will contain, by the way, lambda and tau p. But it would be wrong to conclude that you have to match this result to that because this is Q to the fourth. Right? In that analysis, second order analysis, there are other terms of the same order which will enter the game. So it may happen.
So then, strictly speaking, in order to match Q to the force consistently everywhere, I would need to do it sort of in fact.
That's right. In fact, that was a source of major confusion, which sort of stopped our work for several months, because we were matching the whole thing with this term, because it's easy to compute. It's much easier to compute than the sound pole. And there was inconsistency until we realized, in fact, it's around better terms.
No, but that's, again, as you said, that there is no resolution to this inconsistency at the second level. In order to see the resolution,
sure. you have to
yeah. Go one order higher.
Okay. So I stopped at the moment when I said that we can extract this new transfer for n equals 4 superant mills. Let me just show you some pictures. It's the sound dispersion in n equals 4 superant mills. So there is a speed of sound which would be constant if not for these corrections. In fact, it behaves in pretty dramatic way, it crosses the line where speed is equal to the speed of light, right? There's no problem with that because that does not correspond to physical propagation of anything, but a huge imaginary part. This red line is the analytic approximation to this curve. So the curve was gotten numerically because in ADS-CFT, if you want, you can produce things correlated numerically, if you like. But this is an analytic approximation which we used on the previous slide to determine the tau p and kappa. All right, so that's almost the end. So the conclusion, I think, of this work is the following, that the second order conformal Hydra can be systematically constructed. It's not a horrible exercise, although I must say it's not a very pleasant one. It turns out that this second order conformal hydra is more general than the Israel-Stewart theory, I repeat, currently used for numerical simulations, RIC, right? So, in fact, I think it's more general than that. And we use the ESCFT holography to determine all new transport coefficients for n equals 4 in this, which appear in this formalism. And I must say that, okay, so in our paper we considered the thing in the flat space, so we computed eta, tau p, kappa, and one of the lambdas. But there was another very interesting paper by Sharad Nwola and collaborators where they matched on the n equals 4 on the sphere, and then they can actually curve space and they could compute also lambdas, other missing lambdas. So this is the final result, including the results from that paper, the one which we didn't compute. But altogether, all transport coefficients for n equals 4 superand mills in the second order formalism are now computed and they are presented here. And a big question, of course, is not this exercise to suggest an illustration. Nobody cares that much about n equals 4. Oh, at least from PGIN perspective. But the big question is, an open question, how does all this affect RIC numerics? Because clearly, it is obvious that if you do the same thing for non-conformal fluids from coupling, we will get additional terms. The question is whether or not these terms are actually responsible for the deviation of the elliptic flow from the measured value, as I was showing on the first several slides. And that is an open question, and I think for any hope to say something sensible on values of things like shear viscosity based on RIC experiments, one has to face this issue and has to modify the numerical code and so on, because otherwise it's just trying to catch this black cat from the lights and so on. Right? So it's got, there are too many assumptions that make these predictions not reliable from a experimental point of view at the moment. Right? So I believe that there should be some work done to constrain these numerical formats. Thank you.
Can I use a little bit my power and ask the first question? So I have two questions. So the first one is in this Minwala and company paper, are you sure they did it on the sphere? I thought they did it in the Poincaré patch. In fact, I would expect that it's very difficult to go into a hyper regime when I'm in a compact setting.
True, but they, I mean, the approach is philosophically different. They assume the.
But so are you sure they did it on a really in a global? I thought they did it in the Poincaré patch.
But how?
They can still do all the the boosted black holes. I thought that it was crucial. I mean,
no, but how would you get terms which appear at not vanishing curvature? Because we couldn't get this precisely because we weren't in flat.
Well, I mean, some of the, as you know, some of the terms can be obtained within the Yannick framework as well, right?
It's a separate thing. Yannick, yeah, I didn't say anything. Yeah, right. Actually,
so
right.
It's, and that's still flat. So.
Right, but Yannick is a different. It's right. As you well know, and it's a right. It's a different philosophy. Right. So, to be honest, I don't know how they extract the numbers. My assumption was it was because they had some curved space.
But okay, so you know.
Right, so I don't know.
My second question is there a good so the crucial assumption in all this is that the viscous dissipative terms will not break in formal invariance. Why do we have to do it? Is there a good reason for that? Or is that a stupid question to ask?
No, but
for example, if there is, for if you know, the hybrid regime somehow gets violated and there are, you know, vorticities will start importing. I think you know, in with all this turbulence, there are tons of additional scales that show up. So if somehow it will happen that the flow from a coupled plasma cannot be
conformal,
cannot be laminar, then maybe it's not maybe it's not conformal anymore.
So yeah, Alex, I mean it's a very sensible sensible thing to ask for us, and I don't have any reasonable answer to that except that to confirm that, because the conformal invariance of the thing was imposed here, it's not. You just demand that you just deal other terms, assuming that the only scale in the problem remains temperature and nothing else. What you're saying is that there could be dynamical generation of additional scales
by
higher derivative terms.
Right.
And although, as I said, I don't have a good answer yes or no, I would guess that that would be associated with nonlinear terms rather than higher derivative terms.
Oh, okay. Good. So, any questions to Andre? We still have some time. All right, so let's thank Andre again.